110 here just very, very shortly.
I was going to say, don't forget the website, QSORadioShow.com and TedRandall.com. You can go up there and get a live stream if you lose it there on the shortwave. So don't forget about that if you get caught in a skip zone there.
Well, Ted, I've been checking the bands, and, of course, in our part of the woods, the 80s noisy with static crashes and 40s noisy, but 10 is open. I'm hearing all across the northeast into Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I'm hearing the East Coast stations working down into the south. So if that propagation report's any good, if the low bands are too noisy, check out 10 because it looks like the E-skip is going on it. So we worked also worked long, worked Manitoba, Ontario, and Alberta, Manitoba, and Ontario long, but didn't hear them working much into the south. So 10 meters seems to be open, Ted, in a lot of the country. So these guys don't need to close it off and go to bed. They need to get on the radio and start CQing.
Well, the other day, I fired up the radio, and I was surprised 10 was wide open. It was just wild. I hadn't really on 10 in so long, you know. And then I was on 17 meters for a good portion of the time, and I got on the air with a fella, and I can't what was his name now? I can't remember his name. It's terrible, isn't it? I can't remember his name or his call sign. But anyhow, he told me some interesting stories. He talked about his meeting Barry Goldwater. And he told me a few other things, and I recorded it. I'm going to play it on QSO. We have Long Island, New York, on the phone with us here. Hello there. How are you doing? Hello.
Hi.
Okay. I was beginning to think you weren't there. Is this Larry?
Yes, it is. This is Larry. Hi.
And you are in Long Island, New York.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. And the name of your club is?
It's the American Red Cross Emergency Communications Service.
American Red Cross, and I want to write this down, Emergency
Communications
Service. Okay, well, tell us
service.
About your, tell us about your group.
Okay, we are a group of hams and some non-hams who are either studying for or looking into getting a license. And our group is a partner group within the American Red Cross in Greater New York, and we support any communications needs for the American Red Cross in Greater New York at an amateur radio level.
And so now, do you have other activities that are, I guess I want to say, not related to emergency stuff? I mean, do you have, I mean, is the club kind of a, is it a social amateur radio club as well?
Yes, that's correct. We have, besides the fact that we're out on field day, we cook up a very good meal. We just finished dinner here at the site on Eaton's Neck, U.S. Coast Guard Station at Eaton's Neck, Long Island. Just a little bit, if you want to learn about us, we are at www.arcecs.org.
Okay, now that's a little bit much. Go ahead and give me that URL again so I can write it down.
Sure. www.arcecs.org.
Okay, well, it's pretty simple, but the first time around, all internet addresses sound complicated. So it's arcess.org.
ECS.
See what I mean? There you go. Of course, I've been doing this for a long time, so my brain is not exactly right. Of course, my brain isn't exactly right all the time. So, but anyways, it's arcess.org.
That is correct.
Okay, very good. Well, tell us what you're up to today. How are you set up for field day, and how is all this working out?
We're set up pretty good. We're overlooking Long Island Sound. We're on a bluff that overlooks the Sound, and we have the two stations set up right to Alpha. Hold on. Still. I'm on the air. Anyway. WPA station for new.
Looks like we're losing him.
I don't know if you are you can you still hear me? I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll try to see if we can't get Larry back on the telephone here just in a minute. Sounds like we're having some technical difficulties here. QSO Live, Field Day 2009. It's Field Day, 2009.
I try every trick in the book with every step that you take. Everywhere that you look, just look, and you'll find I'll try to get to your soul. I'll try to get to your mind.
That's Lou Christie, and I'm going to make you mine. This is Field Day 2009 coming to you from the hills of Tennessee. And, boy, we've got folks are just calling in from everywhere, and we're finding out all about their Field Day operations, their clubs and organizations. And with me on the phone right now is Bill Maureen. Hello, Bill. How are you this evening?
Hey, Ted, and happy greetings from Wilmington, North Carolina, along the beautiful coastal North Carolina coast of the Atlantic Ocean.
My goodness. Makes us want to move.
Except in hurricane season.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll stay here. Of course, there's always the tornadoes. Maybe we will move. Well, how is Field Day going on your end, sir?
Well, Field Day was challenging this year. First of all, let me qualify. Even a bad Field Day is still a great amount of fun. So it's just great to get out, try your equipment, get all that good camaraderie. But Mother Nature was not as cooperative today. We had high temperatures of 97 degrees Fahrenheit, about 36 degrees Celsius. And then the rains came, and they came. They came in two waves and dumped about a half inch, or let me look for our friends listening, short wave or metric, probably about 1.25 centimeters of rain, all within 20 minutes. And that forced us off the air, so it took a while to get back up again. Nevertheless, still a great, great day.
Well, now, let me ask you this. What is the name of the club that you're involved in or the organization there?
The club I'm in is called the Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club, and azaleas are a type of bush that's indigenous to our area. It's very beautiful. Blooms in lovely pastel colors in the springtime, in fact, there's even some festivals that are here locally that revolve around this very beautiful plant that is unique to the eastern coastal seaboard.
And I want to stop just for a second here for all the folks that are just now joining us on 5110. Good evening. You're wondering, what in the world is this broadcast? This is a live broadcast. We are live. This is not a recorded broadcast. This is live broadcasting from Field Day 2009. And when with me on the telephone is Bill Maureen. Now, Bill is you are the head of the Public Relations Committee, but I don't know the exact title. I'm very bad at that sort of thing. So you had to, for the American Radio Relay League. So why don't you give me the correct title?
Well, I'm very honored. I am the 2009 chairman of ARRL's National Public Relations Committee. It's a year-to-year appointment. I held the appointment last year. And it's an honor. We head up a group of about seven ham radio operators in the United States who are well-versed in public relations, and we help to shape policy that we feel is important to promote amateur radio.
And, of course, I had a chance. We met at the Dayton Hamvention, and I had a chance to meet Bill face-to-face. And he had a chance to get on the QSO radio show, and we sat and talked for a little while. And you had a chance to tell me about all the different kind of things that are going on. And apart from Field Day, tell me a little bit about what it is that is going on as far as, you know, public relations is concerned and things that you're involved in and are doing with the league at this point.
Well, I think, Ted, first of all, so many of the issues that we're addressing relative to amateur radio in the United States, I think that amateurs are facing worldwide. So the things I'm about to describe are not unique to the U.S., but are the same types of issues that a lot of our brethren are also feeling around the globe. And there's a unfortunate perception in the United States that amateur radio is old-fashioned. Let me give you an example. I had a wonderful opportunity tonight. When this massive thunderstorm came this afternoon and forced us to close down operations. Our operations are in a public park. And a woman in a BMW pulled over to where we were. At this point, we were off the air. We had to because of the associated thunderstorms and lightning with the rain that we had. And she asked if anybody had a cell phone. Her cell phone was not working. I think what happened was more precisely, and it wasn't her cell phone, her particular network wasn't working at the moment. It had been disrupted by the thunderstorm. So I gave her my cell phone, which was working, but after she made a call to a family member to let the family member know she was safe, she said, well, what's going on here? Why are you all here? And we went through and explained what field day is, what amateur radio is. And this is a woman, I would say, about 40 years old, had just relocated to North Carolina from Florida, where I think, you know, amateur radio is very active, particularly in hurricanes. Well, I explained what we were doing, what amateur radio is about in field day. She said, well, this is wonderful. I thought you people were passé. And that, to me, just spoke volumes about the perception, particularly for those ages 40 and under, as to what amateur radio is. And the problem, a couple of problems have come about. And with every problem, a firm believer, Ted, that with every problem comes the corresponding opportunities to take advantage and do better. But the problems are that amateur radio, particularly in emergency situations, is no longer the secondary means of communications. There has been, and I think thankfully for the public in general, that primary and other secondary and redundant systems are so reliable now that amateur radio has taken a tertiary or third place position in responding to emergency communications. And we still have those situations where amateur radio shines. The hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, and unfortunately even some man-made disasters such as the phone sabotage situation in Santa Clara, California this past April. And that is where we still excel at what it is we do. But the opportunities to excel in those environments are rarer and rarer. And so we just don't have the frequency of opportunity to show the public and showcase what it is that we do. That's number one. I think the other is somewhat of a technology change in relating to amateur radio, meaning that today, with the solid-state capability of amateur radio, that so much of what we do in today's evolution of technology, we're doing on laptop computers, and we're doing in our home. And so it's not an opportunity for us to be out before the public. So we have these two issues. We have amateur radio no longer the secondary, but really relegated to a tertiary role in emergency response, coupled with that very exciting research and developments going on, but it's not going on in laboratories or in public areas or with a single invention, but they're incremental little things that are going on laptop computers and home-based computers at home where new communications technologies are being developed. So these two environments don't permit the public to really see and witness amateur radio that perhaps they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. So the exposure's there. I think when you tell people that, for example, in the United States, there are 660,000 licensed amateur radio operators, or that there are 2 million worldwide, I think the majority of the public is stunned to hear that number. The people we had out visiting us today, and I'm sure you've heard this throughout the day from other field day people checking in with you, the people who have come who are not hams to a field day demonstration have just been astounded. In fact, I would use the word a jaw dropper with what we can do. We had two public elected officials come to our field day today. Both of them are not hams. Both were not familiar with ham radio or amateur radio. And I think they were amazed. So to sum up this long-winded answer, Field Day, Ted, is to us, I think it's just a wonderful opportunity once a year to get out and really showcase the capabilities of amateur radio to the public at large.
Well, you know, the thing is here you are, you're set up in a public location. There's generators running, there's tents set up, and maybe RVs. And, of course, it really arouses the curiosity of somebody that's passing by or even comes close, you know. And of course, they're saying, what is it all this? What does this mean? You know, I think it's a very – if it's a one time of the year that you have the opportunity to really show off the hobby. Now, there are other groups that do things like go out to the a public location, a park, especially where there's a lot of people, you know, and set up maybe minus the generator, you know, and put the radio out on a table, and they pull an antenna up and the trees and all that, and they have a chance to really show off the hobby. But, you know, Field Day is kind of a magic time, but that's the time you can invite your local authorities in. And, you know, I think there's nothing more impressive. It's got to go through. I was just saying earlier about the local sheriff in a town. We had our local Wilson County Club call in, and you know, I guess I was thinking that when the local sheriff comes out and he sees you set up, it's got to go through his mind. He's got to be thinking in terms of, wow, you know, if we go down, you know, then we can count on these guys. You know, heck, they're set up with generators out in the middle of nowhere and they're talking all over the world, you know. That's got to go through their head. They've got to think that, you know. And
well,
so
I agree. I agree that I think people are astounded with capability. And today, for example, we had non-hams come, and we were a small operation. We were 2A or 2Alpha, meaning we had two stations going. We had one dedicated to phone or upper or lower sideband, and the other dedicated to CW. And CW these days is just a showstopper because so many people just aren't exposed to it any longer. And I think it just fascinates them that we have the capability of sending and receiving messages this way. But they can listen and they can comprehend after a few QSOs as to what voice communications is. And so we had people stop by today and we explained to them, listen to the section name so that you can tell by that where they're located, and we had a large map so we could put pins in as to areas we've located. And that is what really stops people in their tracks. They say, and we say, now remember, this is not a signal that is going through the internet. It is not being relayed anyway. It is a signal that is being hurled through the air hundreds, if not thousands of miles, point to point, directly to an antenna at the other end, and this is the level of communications you can get in an emergency. This, I think, really makes people stop, look, and wonder in amazement. And in fact, this same woman from Florida who said, used the words, well, I thought ham radio was passé, she also at the end came over and said, you guys are the unsung heroes. And I think that's, you asked from a public relations standpoint, I think we need to shake ourselves out of the lethargy that we've allowed ourselves to get into, that we are the unsung heroes. And let's just get rid of that adjective, unsung. Let's return to the status that we are recognized for, and we always have been, is that we are the heroes. We're the heroes of emergency communications.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, one of the things that I felt, and that is, and especially doing this radio show, and that is sometimes hams, you know, we are our own worst enemy in terms of public relations.
Oh, we are.
You know, the idea that somebody can wander out to a Field Day location and no one greet them, shake their hand, or say anything to them. Unless somebody misses a few points, maybe. Go ahead.
You've hit a personal hot button of mine, and you and we're still answering your initial question of about almost 15 minutes ago. What's new in the public relations initiative at ARRL? Something that I'm trying to champion, and I've got to tell you right up front, this is just me speaking. This has not been made into policy. There's no formal program. But I personally would like to see some kind of what I'm calling an ambassador or an ambassadorial program at ARRL instituted within Field Day going forward. Because to me, nothing is more criminal than to have an inactive ham or general member of the public who's interested in amateur radio come to a Field Day event and have nobody greet them or talk to them. And to me, that's almost tantamount to a sin. And we ham radio operators tend to be somewhat, a lot of them, tend to be introverted. And that's a wonderful gift, because if you're introverted, you're highly focused on what you're trying to work on. And that's good, and that's what makes amateur radio work. On the other hand, so many of our brethren need to step out of their comfort zone, get out of their shells, and place their hand in the hand of somebody else and just say, welcome to our Field Day site. What is it that I can tell you about the world of amateur radio? And we need to do more of that.
Well, you know, I guess the thing is you have opportunities with you have opportunities to take the story to the general public in a number of different areas. You can do it, you know, through some newspaper articles, or you can do it through some press. And one of the things we've chosen has been the shortwave radio media. There's a lot of things about shortwave that people don't understand, but we have lots of people listening to this. There's an amazing number of people that tune in and listen to international shortwave radio. And even in the United States, if you take the Radio Shack stores, just Radio Shack, Radio Shack, in every local Radio Shack store, you will find at least 5 models of shortwave radios that are on sale. Mm-hmm. Radio Shack will not stock anything that does not sell. You know, everything, all their inventory, like everyone else today, is computer controlled. Now, they've dropped all the amateur radio equipment, and I think it's not a matter that that amateur radio equipment doesn't sell. It just doesn't sell in sufficient numbers, you know, to interest them, because their target is a broader spectrum of the general public. But they do sell tons of shortwaves, and we have a lot of folks listening. Well, these are the people that have an interest in radio. Their interest goes beyond the casual listener. They buy a shortwave radio because they want to hear news, they want to hear stuff, and they want to listen to hams. And a lot of those radios have BFOs on them, or, you know, it says sideband today. Nobody calls it a beat frequency.
You're dating yourself, Ted.
You know, but they can punch those buttons in and listen. And amazing numbers of hams that I know will get emails and some even phone calls from shortwave listeners. Mm-hmm. So they're out there.
They're out there. Of course, your show has adapted in really being multimedia, because you're on shortwave, which is still a very viable way, and hats off to all our great shortwave listeners around the globe listening to you tonight or today, wherever it is. But you also have podcast capability, streaming audio, and you're doing a very valuable service in getting folks out there who are not yet ham radio operators to say this is a wonderful world. It's a great hobby, and it's a wonderful place to be. I had the question asked of me today by a local television reporter who had come out to document Field Day, Ted, at our Field Day event. What was the appeal? Once you get beyond the issue of, because Field Day is primarily an emergency communications or simulated emergency communications exercise, what's the appeal of getting into the hobby? And the word that I use, because it's the word that I feel, and I think so many hams feel, and I think to some extent so many shortwave listeners feel, is the feeling of magic. The magic knowing that you are tuning in to a signal originating far, far away, and that there's no intermediary means helping to deliver that signal to you. You're just pulling it out of the ether. And that is very exciting to me, and I think it's exciting to an awful lot of other people. And that's largely so much of what the appeal is of amateur radio.
Well, you know, the other thing is when you were talking about Field Day and the general public and not having a somewhat of an ambassador there, you know, present at the Field Day location. And but this goes for, I think, almost anything. Like, for example, somebody casually strolls into an amateur radio club meeting, and then no one talks to the guy. You know, you know, it's just those kind of things. And you're right. Amateur radio operators tend to be introverts. They don't mix well.
but I don't mean to be mean and saying
I don't see it as mean. It's a matter that most of the hams that I know are very, I guess I want to say, technically skilled. And the more technically skilled you are, sometimes the less social skills you have. In other words, if you have the ability to think in concept of in the concepts of complex algebra and equations and relationships and frequency and wavelength and phase and all these kind of things, and all this is just normal to you, you can just breeze through that. You know, the idea that somebody new has walked into the room that you don't know, that doesn't know you, and is totally new to ham radio is kind of like out of sight, out of mind. In other words, that's the level they don't necessarily think on. Although, if that technically skilled individual showed up at an amateur radio club and did not get greeted or talked to, and they were at an entry-level stage, they would have the same reaction from being treated distantly, I guess is the best way I'm saying. Does that make any sense at all? Would they have the same reaction?
Well, yes and no. I will take it one step further. I think there's a certain amount of anonymity if you're behind a microphone or behind a telegraph key or behind a keyboard if you're doing a digital mode. There's something about face-to-face communications that can be somewhat daunting to people. And the key is, one thing I'd really like to cultivate is that in every amateur radio club, you've got to have one or two people that have that comfort level where they will go out of their way or be willing to talk to somebody new. And clubs need to, there are clubs who don't have that capability, or the majority may not, try and really encourage somebody to say, you're the official greeter. Just come on over, and if somebody new comes in, get them acclimated, get them feeling comfortable. And after a while, the other members of the club will come forward and start talking and make the new member feel welcome. But we need all of us to take a step. There's a colleague of mine who used to be on the Public Relations Committee named Jim McDonald, KB9LEI, and he had a wonderful expression, and I think it's true, and that is, every ham is a PIO. There may be some 400-plus officially appointed ARRL, public information officers, throughout the United States. The reality is that every one of the 606,000 licensed ham radio operators is an ambassador for amateur radio service in the hobby. And people need to shake themselves out of their shells, who are hams, and just realize that to the public at large, a lot of people don't realize what we do. And finish this train of thought, it's not so much, I think, being introverts, it's that a lot of hams have a wonderful characteristic, which is unfortunately two-sided, and that characteristic, Ted, is that so many hams are humble. And being humble is, frankly, a very nice attribute these days. In an era where everybody kind of crows about how great they are, it is nice to find people that do their job and do it faithfully. And our job is delivering effective communications to the world. On the other hand, in an era when so many other institutions that love to just brag about what it is they do and accomplish, ham radio needs to step up and say, you know what? We are contributors to the world, too. And what we do is no mean feat. We become licensed by taking written examinations. We study for this. We become experts in our field. We think like MacGyvers, and we deliver fail-safe, reliable communications in adverse situations. And that's no small feat. And so we need to get the public at large and also government officials to understand the importance of that role and what it is that we can deliver.
Well, you were talking about the lady you were talking with, and she was just, you know, she had just discovered, you know, she just figured it out what it is that we do, you know, what amateur radio is, you know. And I think, you know, one of the things I found out on a regular basis in talking about amateur radio, and one thing my son Matt has found out, he put a Tar Heel on the back of his Volvo, the big Tar Heel. So he's traveling in traffic, and he's going down the road, and, you know, the people turn around, and they look, and they gawk, and in parking lots, it's like, what is that, you know? And one of the funniest things was, as he was in traffic one day, and a gentleman rolled the window down. And, I mean, the guy was, like, halfway between scared and angry, you know, and he looked over at this antenna. He says, "What is on the back of your car?" You know? And it was the kind of thing that you probably wouldn't even have the opportunity to explain it to the guy. He was just so upset by seeing this thing, you know. And so Matt turned around casually, just kind of turned around, looked through the back window of the vehicle, you know, and then turned around and did a double take again, and he turned around and yelled at the guy. He says, "What is that on the back of my car?" Like that. I can see it. It was funny. I mean, it was just hysterical. But when you run into people like in a parking lot, the antenna becomes a point of conversation. So it would be kind of nice if...
It is nice.
If folks carried with them some brochures or information and just kept them right in the back seat of the trunk of the car and says, "Well, you know what? You know, I know you don't have time to listen to me explain this right now, and I don't really have time to turn the radio on and operate, but I can give you some information that'll tell you all about what this is." And give them something about amateur radio and let them read about it. I found we have moved away, and this is something I don't think our brethren understand. We have moved far, far, far away from the general public. Now, when people say this isn't your grandfather's radio anymore, okay, I don't think they realize that the reverse is true. This is not your grandfather's public anymore, okay?
Yeah.
They don't have a clue as to what this is. There are those folks out there by the mass that have no idea that Grandpa even had a radio. Okay,
so we have several social forces. We can go on for hours on this, but we have several social forces that are having an impact. I think the central theme that's relevant to what we're talking about tonight is how does this impact amateur radio or ham radio. And part is there was a wonderful piece today while I was writing Two Field Day on NPR, National Public Radio in the U.S., on the increasing isolationism of people, largely because of the Internet, and that people spending time on the Internet are not getting out and getting those face-to-face meetings that they used to have with other people. And that's part of what's making ham radio a victim, because people don't see it in action. They're not aware of what it is, coupled with the fact that they are just bombarded by information and they have so much with which to sort out. And I'm a human being like you. There are just thousands, if not millions, of worthwhile causes that you and I would love to become, not necessarily involved with, but at least find out more about. And there are just thousands of things like amateur radio that deserve more recognition, but just aren't getting it. But that's not a problem. I can't solve all the world's problems in this regard. I do know that as head of ARL's Public Relations Committee, that one of the things we need to look at is how better to get the word out. And that seems to be very key. That's an issue that's very much on the mind of the majority of the members of ARL right now, how to get the word out to everyone, the public in general, and particularly to influential lawmakers about what is important about amateur radio.
But so you got to do.
We got our work cut out for us, Ted.
You've got one thing though. You got to deal with, and that is when I was talking about the general public and the fact that they are unaware. There is a learning curve about this hobby. You have to bring them in at entry level, and then you have to kind of bring them up to speed a little bit so that they understand. One of the most beautiful things I saw was that that link I posted from the New York Times about the moon bounce.
The moon bounce?
Yes. I thought that was just fantastic because that really puts us in the league where we belong. It's a high-tech looking thing, and it talks about, and it isn't exaggerated. I mean, it's pretty true to... It's very true to form. But oddly enough, the fellow that sent me that link is a broadcast friend of mine who was the former and the first program director of MTV, Les mm-hmm. Garland. And he saw that, and he immediately thought of amateur radio, and he thought of shortwave radio. And he said, I need to send this off to Ted. So he sent it to me, and that was the first I had seen of it. But and I didn't know. I thought I may have been posting something that somebody else knew about. But according to Alan, he said no, he hadn't seen it either. So it was
no. I wasn't aware of it either. It was, and I was telling somebody today. I think may be of interest to you and your listeners. I took a very different tact this year, and it worked wonderfully. The tact was that. Those listeners that you have who are in the United States will probably know that there are multiple rules and ways of getting points in field day. And one of the ways to get points is to invite and have at least one elected official at your field day event. That's worth 100 points. And so being the inveterate point getter that I am for the local club, I... went scouring, looking for as many elected officials that I can get. And let's be candid, Ted, trying to get an elected official on a hot Saturday in the summer, in the height of resort season, is tough. It's going to be a pretty compelling case to get a good turnout from elected officials.
You just have to blackmail them, that's all.
Well, not everyone is blackmailable. Thankfully, there are a lot of good, honest politicians, which, again, makes it very tough to get them in because you don't have anything on them. So you're trying to really encourage them to come out. This year, for the first time, Ted, I invited members of our local school board. And in my invitation, which went to them by email, I attached brochures from ARRL's education department. And I tried to put in the text of my invitation a link between the benefits of amateur radio and what it could do to enhance studies, particularly in the areas of math, science, and social studies. Well, a current member of the school board, who's also a past chairman, came out and spent 3 hours with us. The interest with him was that he had been a radio man in the Navy years ago, but had not gone on and gotten his ham license and pretty much left the field of radio after he was discharged from the military almost 40 years ago. But he came out and spent an inordinate amount of time with us today, and thankfully also at our field day today, was the dean of our local university's School of Education, the school that produces teachers for our area or for the state of North Carolina. And the two of them spent an hour and a half talking. The dean, by the way, is also a ham radio operator. So the dean, who's female, and the school board member, who was male, spent about an hour and a half talking about the amateur radio as a teaching tool in the school system. And it was a really fruitful conversation. I would like to see, along with my ambassadorial campaign, that is getting people to greet people at field day, I'd like to see a year coming up soon in which we might really put a push on to get educators to come out to field day to see what the possibilities are of using amateur radio as a teaching tool.
Oh, I think that would be excellent. You know, and I talk to people every day, Bill, that talk about what an influence that amateur radio has been on a career. And today we talked to, I don't know if you know who Jim Davis is, but Jim was on with us. And
isn't he the cartoonist who draws Garfield?
No. Jim Davis, his call sign is W2JKD. If you're from out east, you may have heard Jim on WOR mm-hmm. in New York. He worked at CKLW yeah. in Detroit. He worked at KHJ in Los Angeles. And his radio career is, like, unbelievable. I mean, it just it spans an incredible amount of radio stations. He has a tremendous engineering background. And, you know, he talks about the fact that his first job in radio, he was 16, or he was 14, but he was such a big fella that he was able to lie and tell them that he was 16. He got his first job. But he says everything that has happened to him so far all started off with amateur radio and getting into amateur radio. And he took a class, I think it was a YMCA was putting an amateur radio class together, and he took it and passed his test and got the license. You know, and I could go on and on. Bob Heil says everything that he is today, he owes to amateur radio. And, of course, if you see the presentation on him, the same is actually true with both of my sons that are working in professional engineering positions. Both came up the ranks of pulling antennas up in trees, you know, and learning the practical MacGyver side of amateur radio. You know, so mm-hmm. when you're talking about that, the teachers and the educators can incorporate parts of this right into their curriculum because it touches so many things. I mean, it crosses over math. It crosses over language skills. I mean, it crosses over geography. Yeah, you know, there's. I mean, my goodness. I mean, how many different subjects relate to amateur radio when you think about
right.
it? You know. So I think that's an excellent idea. I think you're right on the money. I think that's definitely, and especially if you can get into the school side of it, you start getting into the point where you are able to reach a number of younger people, or at least plant a seed there. Then you've got it made, because that seed will develop and it'll grow, especially if they even acquire the slight taste for the hobby.
Well, you've said it better than I could have, Ted. I mean, you picked up exactly where I was going with this conversation. Go ahead.
Well, that's something that's been kind of heavy on my mind, and that's one of the reasons why I value the hobby so much. I think each one of us has a reason as to why we value this hobby. You know, and I think that a lot of those reasons are personal. So a lot of us have our own personal reasons why, when we get a little older, we value the hobby so much. And we see the potential there, and, of course, we want to pass that on. We want that someone else to be able to obtain the same kind of thing, and we don't want to see the hobby dwindle or go downhill or go by the wayside, or folks feel that it's being overshadowed by computers and technology, because, indeed, it's not. You know, it really isn't.
No, it isn't. And that's why when you think about, and one of the things I try to go out my way is to say that there are three major aspects to amateur radio, two of which immediately jump in the public's mind. One is the fellowship or fun, which is the on-air operating, the DXing, the contesting, the camaraderie in amateur radio. Then there's what Field Day is supposed to be, which is the public service display aspect of it. The fact that, and again, remember that word amateur. The word amateur means that doesn't mean unprofessional. It means that we do not accept compensation for services that we donate, and that the value of the equipment and the value of the services which amateur radio operators donate to state, municipal, and federal government just is in the millions of dollars of systems that those governments do not have to replicate commercially. And that's an important message to get out. But the third message, the third one I want to say, Ted, that a lot of people don't realize is that the experimentation, which is very much encouraged by the FCC, provided that you stay within your power limit, you stay within your frequencies, and that you do not knowingly cause interference, that you're allowed to experiment with new modes of communications, that just creates a wonderful laboratory. What's throwing so many people off is that laboratory used to be the guy sitting at a bench putting together circuits with tubes, resistors, capacitors, but today that same type of dedication of experimentation takes place on a computer, and usually a laptop computer. I was telling several people from the public today that they said to me, and again, the woman again, going back to that same woman that said, I thought ham radio was passé, I said to her, you know, your car today is not like your grandfather's car. Your car is really a computer that moves on wheels. An airplane is a computer that flies through the air because of the control systems involved. Today's radio, and particularly ham radio, is a computer that transmits and receives. And so the experimentation with new generations of technologies, a lot of it so much has to do with programming. And it to somebody who's not versed in that, they look at somebody at a keyboard, they can't distinguish, well, is that person doing email? Is that person doing experimentation on something unrelated to amateur radio, or are they doing amateur radio work? And once you tell people that amateur radio today, the most sophisticated or emerging technologies are really computer applications that add RF capability to it, then the light bulb begins to go off. And then they make the next level of connection, which is tomorrow's electronic engineers can get a start today by getting their amateur radio license and begin tinkering now with what the potential lies for the future.
And that is so true. The thing I was going to say about what you were mentioning is that as far as the new technologies are concerned, you know, when you look into things like the, well, for example, IRLP and Echolink are two different things that are, I think, just short of incredible. I mean, what you can do with those things.
Right.
And to be on a notebook, I had to laugh because I was talking to Jim. Now, he's a general manager of a group of stations down in Vero Beach, Florida. He was telling me, he said, well, you know, it's odd. He said, used to we had to have this, we had to have that. And he says, now everything we do in radio can be done on a notebook. All the complicated audio editing, even video editing for you know, like for television movies and things. Things can be done on a notebook, you know, and so we're moving in that direction. To try to run away from that is just crazy. And I hear people complain all the time and say things like, well, that Echolink, it's not ham radio, and I wouldn't have a computer in my shack. One of the biggest obstacles we've got in order to take, and I guess I want to say influence the general public into knowing what we're all about, and to influence young people to understand that this is not an antiquated technology, that this is taking computers and RF and combining them together, like you said, the biggest obstacle we've got to that is some of our own. My goodness.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of these folks have got to just put aside the prejudices. They've got to put aside the politics. And they've got to say, this is good for the hobby. Let's just do this, you know. Let's do it because it's good for the hobby, and kind of get out of the way. I think that, and once they do, I think they'll feel a lot better about it, and I think they'll be able to see, you know, the fruit on the tree when it starts to come in. And
well,
but right now that is. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say a point of pride. I mean, every time we see a ham who gets some kind of recognition, I feel the attaboy and a little bit of a kindred spirit. There, I say, hey, there's one of our guys. You know, he's got out there. He's done something that's going to benefit mankind. We don't see enough of those now the way we used to. And I'm always astounded, Ted, when you go down a list of famous people or influential people, and they're not necessarily celebrities, but a lot of government officials, policymakers who have may not necessarily be currently licensed now, but used amateur radio as a springboard for their careers. There's no reason why amateur radio still cannot serve as a similar springboard today for tomorrow's leaders.
If we can do the necessary things, you know, to make the progress in those areas. Now, of course, most folks involved in the hobby, they work full-time jobs, they're involved in all kinds of different things, and their time is limited. So, you know, we're not looking at a situation here where somebody can work this full-time. Now, maybe some of the folks at the league can do that, but the thing of it is the average individual that's out there trying to promote ham radio, you've got some limited resources. So we have to really make the best of the time that we have. And I think it would be a good thing for clubs all across the country to sit down and kind of assess what it is that they can, where they can make a difference, you know, what they can do. And then, like you said, assign an individual to be that public relations person or that ambassador. I guess I like the word ambassador because it spells it out. I mean, somebody who is not adverse to shaking hands and running up to a stranger and saying, "Hey, it's good to see you, and your name is," and you know that really is an outgoing a type of person. I mean, we really need those people placed strategically, and a lot of those. But now, let me say something here, and that is this: we can't have folks inside of our organization that are going to throw a fit and not allow these ambassador types to function and move about and to do this kind of work inside of the organization. They've got to be able to say, give them their blessing and say, "Yes, we need this done." And that, I believe, other than the fact that, you know, that may not be ambassador types everywhere you go, I think the first thing, there's a few members maybe holding up the show is the only thing that would prevent this from happening.
Right. Well, I would agree with that. Ted, I feel like I've been monopolizing your time, and I'm looking, and we're coming up to the top of the hour, and I'm sure there are others that would want to get on and share their field day experiences, and I've had just a delightful time just spending some thoughts on field day and some of my experience of the field day with you for the almost the past hour, well, 45, 50 minutes or so.
Yeah, we've talked a long time, but that's okay. I mean, we're kind of winding down. We're getting toward the end of our broadcast here. And I haven't really been pursuing the phone number on the air very aggressively, but I'm getting a little tired. I've been on the air since 1 o'clock.
I know you have.
So I'm sitting here thinking, is it possible for a human being to talk a solid 11 hours? Ooh, I don't know. I've only played very few songs. So that means I've been talking an awful lot, you know. So I guess when getting somebody like you on the phone that can carry a conversation, it kind of gives me a break. I'm thinking, let's let Bill talk a little bit here. Bill, you got anything else you want to talk about?
No, just that if you haven't already, get out and go to a field day location near you. By the way, on the ARL website, if you go to arrl.org and go into the field day area, there's a locator area which puts up maps as to where the nearest field day location is to you. And that's a very helpful tool. So find out where the one is and go out tomorrow. It continues until, what time? I think 1800 UTC tomorrow.
All right. Well, that's an open invitation. The field day locator is there. Folks can go out and join in on a field day. And if they don't have an ambassador there, then you just go up to somebody and say, "Hey, I want to know what this is all about." And eventually you'll get to somebody that will explain all of that to you. Bill, thank you so much. And you know what? I've got your club's name is in the hat.
Thank you.
Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club.
Yes,
and
sir.
Who knows? You guys may win that TW2010 backpacker, you know. And
well, it would be an honor if we did, and we'll go to good use. And Ted, thank you so much for the valuable service you and all of your team there at the QSO show are providing to shortwave listeners and audio streamers and podcasters, downloaders around the world about the benefits of amateur radio.
Well, I thank you for calling in, and you just keep up the good work and keep that public relations committee running on all eight cylinders. Don't let them slow down, and don't let them take a nap.
Well, we have an occasional ping, but we put a new spark plug in, and away we go.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Have a great evening, Ted. Good talking with you.
You do the same thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to a special QSO broadcast of Field Day 2009 brought to you by Transworld Antennas. The number to call in from your field day location is 615-469-0702. And when you call, your group is qualified for the drawing for the Transworld TW2010 Backpacker Antenna Package, complete with quadrupod and carry bag. Once again, that number is 615-469-0702. And now back to your host, Ted Randall.
Field Day 2009, that's what it is. And we are on the air. Live, coming to you from the hills of Tennessee. I just woke up Dr. Barrett. He had just kind of pleasantly dozed off here, and I interrupted his nap by going, "Hills of Tennessee."
Well, Ted, I've had a significant lunch and dinner cuisine, replete with all manner of dessert. In the meantime, it's getting on to my bedtime here.
Now you can't go to bed. Now this is field day. You have to stay up. As soon as we get off the air here, okay, you've got to get on 80 meters. That's all there is to it. So
I didn't say I was going to stay down. I'm just going to take my little cat nap.
We've got David on the phone with us. Hello, David.
Good evening. Good evening.
And you are WY7U?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and you are located where, sir?
Green River, Wyoming.
My goodness, you're out west.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, tell us all about your field day operation.
Well, we are operating two stations, so we are 2 Alpha. We are running on generators. 15 meters is just hanging in there unbelievably. I can't believe that it's still open. I'm still talking to California on 15 meters. 40 meters, the other one that we have been running mostly, and it's a zoo. Hard to get a word in edgewise, but it's been a good field day so far.
Well, tell me a little bit about your organization, about how many folks are involved in your group.
Our club, the Sweetwater Amateur Radio Club, we only have about 15 paid members at this point. We're kind of a low point, but trying to build back. Got quite a history. It goes back several years. Not sure just how far, because it actually predates before I came to Green River. But we try and stay active. We did host the Wyoming conference this year in Casper, Wyoming. And we try and have a couple of special events each year. Just have fun with ham radio.
Well, do you, I guess I want to say, do you folks do things like, for example, are you involved in any emergency communications work, and do you interface your local folks much at all? Have you been able to do much of that?
Yes, we do work with our local emergency management. Matter of fact, we have used their equipment this evening just to give it a workout and make sure that it's going to work when time comes. They have bought us other equipment, and, of course, when they call, we show up.
Do you do any work at all as far as young people are concerned, getting them involved and pulling them into the club and doing any Elmering or mentoring, volunteer?
In the last couple of years, we have not. Prior to that, we were doing quite a few classes. But it just seems like the interest right now is kind of down. We do want to work with the Jamboree on the Air with the Boy Scouts coming up. We one of our members is the is very active in scouting also, so he's keeping us abreast on that to try and get with the Boy Scouts. We do try to teach any time that we can when any of the youth groups ask us to come out and speak. So, you know, in those ways, yes, but it's kind of tough around here.
Well, sometimes, you know, what happens is you have these people that will teach the classes and have the time to do that, and all of a sudden there's a job change, and then the person moves away, and the person that was doing this is no longer around anymore. So those kind of programs come and go based around people, their lives, and where they're living, and, you know, where they're moving and what direction they're in. And there's been a lot of economic changes in our country, so certain key people may move. You know, if they lose a job or something like that, and all of a sudden they're no longer available in the club. And a lot of those type of programs, I know I've talked to folks that say that they used to do this, but we don't do that anymore, you know. And that's a lot of times that's the reason why, you know.
Yeah, I can definitely relate with that because and around here we have a lot of shift work. It's a mining economy and oil exploration. So, you know, we have people that, you know, yes, I could do it here and here, but not here. And so it gets difficult.
Now what is your, I'm going to say this. Do you have very many neighboring clubs around, other amateur radio clubs surrounding you?
We have one in Sublette County. You got to understand, Wyoming's spread out. So, you know, we think that, you know, 100 miles is not very far to travel. So we have the Sublette Club, which is about 100 miles from us. And then probably the next closest ones that are active would be Casper, which is about 250, Cheyenne, which is almost directly across the state from us, and then Cody, which is north up almost to the Montana border, and Gillette, which is in the northeast corner. Those are the real active clubs in the state.
Well, so far this year on Field Day, what have been your best bands, the most activity you've seen and contacts you've made?
15 and 40 so far. I don't know that we've been up on 20 much. I think one guy was a little while ago, and he got a few contacts there. As it happens, we have a get on the air station. That's the one that had been on 15, and it was hopping pretty good. And then I jumped onto it with our regular WY7U call, and I've been having a ball with it. I got a Pacific station actually on 15 meters from here.
Well, very, very good. So now, how many people did you have to get on your go-to station? Did you have very many folks come out to get on it?
Actually, we didn't. Most of it was just one person. We have two people who have tried. So.
But that's good. Even if it's one person, that's one person that's gotten a taste of amateur radio that's going to go away with something that will stay with them for a long time. And
Yes. And those people get out and they talk.
Yes, they do.
That was great. That was fun. And with that, we get more and more interest.
You know, I've even heard stories of people who have gone out to observe a field day, and they were offered, you know, go ahead and get on the air, and oh, no, and they were too afraid, mic fright, afraid of looking like they didn't know what they were doing and whatnot. So a friend of theirs would get on, and they'd watch the operation, and just on watching, the interest was so intense that eventually they wound up getting into ham radio. And they didn't operate, but they were just an observer. And I've heard of this. It's kind of funny. Thinking that someone can vicariously stand there and and they actually are operating the radio in their mind, but they're too afraid to get up on it and actually do it themselves.
Yeah, to see their face when the call that they give comes back to them on that radio, the look on their face that first time is priceless. I mean, it's better than making my own contacts. It's really great.
Well, sir, I thank you so much for coming on the air with us, and the name of your club is going in the hat. We're going to be having a drawing for the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker, which comes with a quad stand and the carry bag. And, of course, this thing, you can set this thing up in about 2 minutes. And it's extremely a high-performance portable antenna. You're going to be used permanently. It's stealth. You can hide it somewhere. So if your club wants to operate somewhere and they don't want anybody to see the antenna, you just set it up and set it outside, and most people won't even notice it. It just kind of blends in. Well, I thank you much. Good hearing from you. And hopefully we'll be able to hook up again sometime.
Okay, and thank you very much for promoting ham radio the way you are. It's very important that we get the word out.
Well, we feel the same way, and that's why we do it. And we thank you much, and we also want to thank our sponsor, Transworld Antennas, for backing this type of radio programming on International Shortwave. And thank you so much. Good hearing from you, and we hope to hear from you. Well, maybe we'll talk to you again next year.
Maybe so. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Field Day 2009. Well, what's going through your mind, Dr. Barrett? You're sitting over here. I'm sure you're thinking about something.
I'm almost ready to jump on 15 meters and work at Wyoming Club.
Yeah. So
I'm not sure I've got Wyoming on 15 meters. I may need them.
You may need to get them, huh?
So, that's right.
That's interesting. We can go back and we're talking to. To Bill Maureen, who is the chairman of the ARRL's Public Relations Committee. And, you know, you stop and think about all the impact that Field Day can have across the entire country in one day if it's all handled right. You know, and of course, even what we're doing gives an awful lot of exposure. And we have a lot of people listening on shortwave, and a lot of would-be hams that are listening on shortwave. That can be, we want to pull you people in. See, we want to convert you, want to get you on the air.
I think that Bill is really right. The you know, we receive what we sow. If we sow distance and we sow. An attitude that we don't really care whether there's anybody else in the hobby or not, then we're going to see apathy from the general public. On the other hand, if we promote the avocation and we encourage people to be a part of it, we make them feel welcome, we try to show them the benefits of it, then they're going to, a number of them will embrace it. But just like in any walk of life, Ted, you have a certain number of hams who are, you know, if there was never anybody else in the hobby, they are of the opinion that the numbers we have are sufficient for what we need to do. There are others that would like to expand the numbers from 600,000 to 1 million. So you get differences of opinion and different thoughts, different ideologies. But the reality is this, with the aging of the ham population, it's a matter of time till the numbers are going to deplete, and unless we replace them, then you're going to see HF go the way of VHF and UHF. You're going to, a few times a year, you may have a lot of folks to talk to, and the rest of the time, it's going to be tough to find somebody to talk to. So for what that's worth, that's one man's opinion.
No, I happen to agree with you, and I think that's another reason why we're here, doing what we're doing. You know, and all these folks that are able to call in, you know, look at the exposure they're getting. You know, everybody finds out about their Field Day activities that are tuning in and listening in. We got somebody on the phone with us right now. Hello there. Hello.
Yep.